the brain structure, upon which depends the expression of mental and spiritual powers, can absorb all the vitality the system can generate, if the individual will only turn his attention to the cultivation of the mental powers, instead of dwelling upon the delights of physical sensations. Our great work at present is the perfection of the human race upon the plane of a more exalted grade of mental and spiritual development. The spirit world, a legitimate field of inquiry. 454. An anonymous manuscript continuing the foregoing into the realm of spirit, as follows: the nature of the electric and magnetic forces has always been a puzzle to the student of science. All that physical science is able to discern is its relations in the lower conditions of matter. The spirit world, as well as the physical, is a field of legitimate inquiry, and the barriers that craft and superstition have erected to guide it, we swept away, and the consideration of the outcome of physical life opens a wide field of conjectural speculation. But there need be little controversy about the subject, as the laws which govern the processes of death are as well defined as the laws that govern the processes of life. It is purely chemical and equally absolute and irrevocable. To the masses, spirit life is a mystery and death a hopeless problem, while the world of the invisible is a realm never to be explored by mortal mind. We have no sympathy with the ignorance which would refuse to look beyond the earthly existence, nor have we any tolerance for the craft that would make an industry of its relations, or prevent the rational consideration of it from any motive whatever. 455. It is a startling hypothesis that the worlds innumerable in space are but the handiwork of minds immortal in potency of being, but it is not more so than the overwhelming evidence that the universal consciousness of being, which pertains to the reflection of the universal mind power by which worlds pursue an endless cycle of transformation. 456. So palpable is the consciousness of the infinite intelligences in this age of the world, that no attempt is made to impose upon the world the crude speculation which was the condition of the world when opening a paragraph of traditional theories was penned, purporting to be by some ancient writers for the benefit of the ignorant devotees of a fabricated religious creed. 457. These revelations have the distinction of belonging to the department of natural laws and relations, and there is no limitation to the scope of action. It pertains to all departments of being, and leads the intellect into the realm of the spiritual cosmos, and through the fields that belong to the purely visible relations. In fact, these revelations in the invisible are as interesting as in the visible, and when pursued with laudable motives, are productive of a degree of satisfaction that will repay the labor or trouble one may have in the research. 458. However, the interest of scientific revelation for the present age must center about the physical realm, as the mortal mind of Earth cannot yet get above the evidence that pertains to the physical senses. What you perceive by them is real, and what is beyond your cognizance is doubtful, or too obscure to be regarded with much credence. The revelations of science can hardly be said to be more than fairly begun, yet their effect upon the mortal mind of the race is marvelous. Friends, the only limit to these powers seems to be in the incapacity of the brain to perceive, except according to its development. But the limits are being steadily extended from generation to generation and age to age. However, the intelligence of the race has always been proportional to the evolution of brain powers. It has been tinctured with the idea that physical senses had stamped upon the consciousness, so that there has been much confusion of thought upon all subjects that could not be measured by the standard of the physical senses. 459. This may be said to be unscientific by the less informed, but the highest should avail itself of all the knowledge that others have acquired, and then upon that basis launch out into the undiscovered and unknown realms upon a voyage of transcendent importance to the welfare of the human race. The laws governing the world of spirit are so much more lenient, as well as powerful, than those governing the material realms, that however low in the scale the life of individuals may have been upon your planet, its transfer to a better environment enables it to proceed upon its way with no worse conditions to encounter, and the chances infinitely in its favor for a better evolution than it ever could obtain on your planet. Draper. 460. A typewritten message produced at the rate of 150 words per minute, consisting of the following words, to wit, A. The amiable delusion of all intellectual leaders is that, to them has been entrusted the saying of the final and clinching word. But they lose sight of the great principle of action and reaction by which man's efforts are directed. 461. The course of human thought runs in cycles. The age of great things done carelessly is followed by the age of small things done carefully, and vice versa. One generation considers the matter, the other the manner, one the value of the thing itself, the other the elegance of the setting. An age of earnest and serious purpose is preceded, as well as followed, by an age of mockery or frivolity, an age of poetry by one of prose. A. There are signs in the air that a new reaction will soon set in regard to spiritualism. The final outcome of the struggle is a question not to be lightly answered. Those who came to scoff will remain to praise. B. Evolution means progress, and where the vulgar eye sees only in the recurrence of similar phenomena the return of the wheels of being to the old groove, a deeper philosophical insight recognizes an infinitesimal gain at each new revolution. No great movement has been unmixed good. Every reaction frees the human mind from a small portion of the error that accompanied the original movement, while the error, in the reaction, calls in turn for elimination by a similar process. 462. Every thinking man, at the outset of his career, at least is conscious of a spiritual and material body. But whichever body external forces may elect that he develop, will be developed at the expense of the other. Only by concentrating his energies within the mental and moral limitations of either one or the other can he hope to do efficient work. Most men purchase symmetry at the expense of strength, or strength at the expense of symmetry. For the intellectual leader, strength is the prime requisite. He must sacrifice symmetry, he must be content to be a half man. The measure of your hatred is the measure of your love. For the sake of the intense love which enables a great man to do his work, you must pardon that hatred for all objects external to his range of vision by which he walls in his love and keeps it strong and deep. The fruits of love endure, they are brought forth in light and knowledge. The fruits of hatred perish, they are produced in darkness and ignorance. A. It is noble to soar to heights unattainable by the multitude, and it is noble also to descend, that you may meet and interpret to the thousands upon the plain that which was given to the few upon the mount. B. Messages from higher spheres must be interpreted, otherwise they are of no practical worth. Doubtless they will be shorn of some part of their glory at each successive transmission. But if only a single ray reaches the multitude, they are to that extent bettered. To that extent the medium has not lived and suffered in vain. C. All religion, philosophy, art, heroism, is the attempt of the individual to make intelligible to some other soul, in concrete moral, in uttered word, in carven stone, in acted deed, that vision of the perfect which suffuses his being. If he considered the masses and strove to reach them, the magnitude of his task would overwhelm him, his tongue would cleave to his mouth, his hand would lose its cunning. But he scorns the masses as Philistines, children of darkness, and his very scorn nerves him to fashion his revelation in some form that will appeal to the chosen few, the few he deems it his mission to save. He does not know that these few in the course of the seasons will enlighten the many. D. The great thinker scales the mountainside, and delves deep into its caverns for the ore of truth. What cares he that the unthinking multitude are surging and wrangling at its base? What cares he though he have only strength to bear his precious burden to the surface? There, at the surface, it will be seen and recognized at its value by one or two strenuous spirits who have followed in his traces. That thought heartens him to his task. But his followers have also their appointed task. Theirs is to bear the nugget down into the marketplace, where it shall eventually be cleaned of all dross, be rent into fragments and pass into the common currency. 463. This then is the history of all intellectual progress. The man who lives on the higher plane of his own being, who with mighty efforts has surmounted commonplaces, traditions, and conventions, surmounted, not skirted their base, and who has strength enough to carry his intelligence a furlong farther into chaos, to snatch from the formless and the void the thought that shall revolutionize society in the coming generations, rarely has strength enough also to mold it into logical and verbal perfection which will appeal to all educated and thinking men. 464. But other men, struggling toward the same goal, who have had their steps directed and their pathway smoothed by the original explorer, can use their untaxed energies in giving form and symmetry to the new truth. These men may even have more strength and use it more tellingly than the men who live on what you have called the higher plane. B. The discoverer of the felicitous word is as original as the discoverer of the new idea, and may be the greater man of the two. 465. Nature, indeed, refuses to be classified. She laughs at scientific precision. You cannot draw lines through the rainbow, and say here yellow begins and green ends. The same difficulty attends any effort to distinguish sharply the spirit world from the material. Hitherto we have been endeavoring, in a broad and general way, to indicate the progress of the spiritual development of man. 466. The thousands upon the earth plane must be reached. The truths of spirit communion must become a part of the heritage of man. The truths the great souls have labored to present to you must be breathed chiefly in the common air, or their labors have been in vain. We have labored long to bring to you these nuggets of truth, and now you must convert them into a form most needed by those upon earth. We know that they will be sneered at by the cynic, discussed angrily and doubtfully at first, but later with wiser apprehension, by the orthodox, until at last their benign influence will permeate everywhere. Signed, Draper. And now comes Lily, and concludes the experience of Rosebud as follows, to wit, see Ante, close of 442. 467. As I was telling about our visit to the church and searching for effects in spirit life, my charge became convinced that the people of the so-called churches in your country are laboring under a delusion from which they are not freed for some time after entering spirit life. And she ministered unto such for a time until they could see the way, and she, in trying to reach the church people of earth, found a little child which she could approach and converse with, and she told the little child she was an angel, a spirit from on high, and told the child she would be her guide, and she asked the little child if she believed in God, and the child said she did, that her parents had taught her all about God. And the spirit told the child that its parents were much mistaken in many things, and how she had been schooled in spirit life, and never met God, nor been taught, as true, any of the common dogmas of the church people. And none of these who go to spirit life either in youth or age ever find those teachings of the church on earth to be true when they reach the spirit side. 468. And the little child in her purity and sweet innocence told its parents how it had met an angel that said it was a spirit and had always gone to school in the spirit world, and those who went to school there were always happy and had such nice schools and homes, and when they got larger they had other teachers, and how all in heaven, as our preacher calls it, are always happy and always helping one another. But they don't call it heaven, they call it the spirit world. This pretty girl that met me said she never saw any God nor any Savior, but just the good messengers, and they meet little children and all people when they die, and take them away to beautiful homes where all our good folks have gone. And this innocent child's parents began to scold and tell their little one it had met the evil one, but the child said no, no, it was a beautiful girl, and she told me there is no evil one, only some bad people on earth. And these pious parents quarreled with that pure child, and accused it of telling stories, and at last, they unmercifully punished their little child for not having more sense than to be led away by the devil in disguise. Such a cruel religion you have on earth. 469. And my ward met another child of the church schools on earth, and that child could see the beautiful Rosebud with her shining countenance. And Rosebud talked to this child as she had talked to the other one of the beautiful homes and schools in the spirit world and the good messengers, and of how these messengers take charge and care of newborn spirits and help them out of earthly errors, and that no God nor personal savior other than these messengers would ever be found among the dwellers of the spirit world. And this child, likewise as the other, informed its parents of all that it had seen and heard of the messenger, Rosebud, and its parents in good Christian rage and fiery anger terribly beat and punished the child for listening to a good kind angel talk about the false teachings of the church concerning God and conditions beyond the tomb. And even angels wept at the cruelty of the religious hearts of the pious parents of that sweet child. 470. And we turned away to wild heathen peoples, and found no such hard-hearted parents in the whole pagan world as to punish a child for listening to the voice of such an innocent spirit as my dear Rosebud, and persisting in obedience to the voice of the beautiful angel. And I hope you have no such parents, with hearts so callous, among your neighbors here. Good night. Seance number 28, October 2nd, 1902, 471. Present as visitors, Mrs. W. J. Fuhr, of California, Missouri, and Edward Butler, of Memphis, Mo. After the regular opening exercises and medium seated in cabinet, the weather being somewhat inclement and indications for storming, Dr. Reed said, "A. The weather is very unfavorable for us this evening, and we may not be able to give you a great deal at this time, but we'll do the best we can." 472. Accordingly, a manuscript was made in continuation of electric and magnetic forces, which is appended to the article on that subject commenced at last seance. 451-459, Wainigo 473. A picture of some ancient personage, whose name, Sam informs us, was Wainigo, and no further information was given us save that he was a bishop, but the spirits seemed desirous to have the picture inserted. Francis, an exhortation to courage. 474. A typewriting, signed Francis, was made in the usual way and in the following words: "For ages the grim specters, public opinion and prejudice, have blocked the pathway to all things progressive. Those who feel that they have acquired sufficient courage to help their neighbors to live a better life no sooner come in contact with these monsters than their courage oozes out, and they turn and flee. Every year precious lives are lost for fear of what they will say." 475. Some people are constantly asking, "Why don't our spirit friends help us more in our daily lives?" Our mission is to awaken ambition in your own souls so you will reach out for yourselves, gathering strength at each effort as the little child gathers strength through the repeated use of its muscles. Your lives, whether good or bad, are an example for someone. You will always be in sorrow and trouble if you do not value, correctly, the rights of others. If your neighbor is trying to reach a higher life by or through any channel, speak encouraging, cheering words. Don't sneer at him because he does not see fit to travel the same road that you have so clearly marked out for yourself. The chief requisite is for him to become better morally and spiritually. Accept good wherever you find it. The sunshine is just as warm and as well stored with health when it shines in the humblest hut, as when it shines in the rich man's palace. Nature has not one, but many, ways to accomplish the end desired. Don't depreciate the efforts of others. All cannot work in the same way. 476. And to have a harmonious whole, you must all strive to bring forth all that is truest and best in yourselves and neighbors. At an age when railways are traversing every continent, and ships of steel are rushing over the oceans at railway speed, and telegraph and telephone wires are stretched from village to city, the people of Earth should grow closer to each other, they should feel a community of interests. Earth is a beautiful and joyous place, pulsating with music that you, in your endless rush for wealth, have no time to hear. Nature provides a bountiful supply for all, and in cases of failures of crops in certain sections of the country, there need be no famine of any kind, if you would only realize that it is your duty to provide for each other. Realize that, no matter what the color or condition is, you are children of one parent, and should give a brotherly support to those in need. Don't say you are not responsible for the sufferings of others. You may feel that they brought the conditions they suffer so much from upon themselves, and while this may be true in some cases, the need of the hour is that you rescue them from their immediate danger, and try and eliminate the cause afterward. Friends, these are a few of the many useful lessons I have learned in this glorious spirit land. 477. Upon earth I was rich and arrogant, But when I came, unwilling, to dwell in the spirit land, I found that the boasted power of riches was a fallacy. Money is without power. I did not learn these lessons in a day or week, but through years of suffering. 478. What would I have not given if I had only used the riches I so foolishly hoarded up, to relieve suffering of all kinds? I stood alone. Not friendless, but my friends were unable to help me. In fact, I was too proud to receive help from others, and thus I worked alone, seeing, almost daily, people whom I might have helped to have been better men and women. They had foolishly followed my example for no other reason than that they thought me rich and powerful. Spirits I would have passed by unnoticed upon the public highway, I found had happier homes than I. I trust that all who have riches may be brought to the realization of the responsibilities that riches bring to them. Signed, Francis Seance, No. 29, October 5, 1902. 479. Present as visitors, Mrs. J. S. Dixon, of Marshalltown, Iowa, and Edward Butler, of Memphis, Missouri. After the opening exercises, the spirit Denton stood forth in condition of visibility and set out the law of hypnotism in the following spoken words. 480. Friends, since I was here before, I have had a great experience. I have met many in different conditions. Persons are leaving the earthly life all the time, and in every conceivable degree of unfoldment, they reach this side. Some come weeping, some reach the spirit world shouting, others are mad. As they are with you on earth, so also, they are when they reach us here. As long as people live on earth, in the earthly body, and pass out to this side, these things, these conditions, will be, as essential concomitants of evolution. And from these varied conditions we are enabled to learn many valuable lessons concerning the laws of being, among which are laws of magnetic, electric and electromagnetic conditions, and their influences upon the human organism both on earth and in the spirit world. And we find that some persons are found to be magnetic, some electric, some electromagnetic. These conditions are found in every conceivable degree of admixture, and rendering each subject subservient or domineering accordingly. Therefore, some persons are said to be warm-hearted, attractive, sympathizing, swaying the multitudes. Others seem cold, distant, repulsive. And you wonder why some have more influence than others? The principal reason is found in the difference of individuals, in their magnetic and electric relations. And when I have said this, I have explained the law of hypnotism. Thomas Paine. 481. When Denton had gone away, Thomas Paine came forth shouting, in a loud voice, "Can you expose a truth?" This remark was, doubtless, in response to a conversation among the circle, before the seance, concerning the efforts of some in the neighborhood to hire someone to make an expose of our medium. Then this spirit came again in the full garb of the colonial days, including knee buckles, and exclaimed, "The world is my country. To do good is my religion. Friends, it is with pleasure that I am here at this time, and able in this way to speak a word to you, and I hope that what I say now, though but a word, may be read and heard and remembered. And what I would shout aloud is, that your world is full of suffering, and some are even crying for bread and some are rushing on for wealth, for the mighty dollar, and they rush madly until the grim monster strikes, and all surrender to his demands. Then some look up from groveling earth, some see beautiful visions in passing on, and some, from these visions, are called back, but at last, all must go, the high, the low, the rich, the poor, all have to go at last. Good night." Cloramon. Figure 16. 482. This picture was made in colors by the spirit artist in his usual way and in his quick time, occupying no more time than to have made it in plain crayon. 483. During the making of the picture, the artist was talking all the while with the circle, to the subject of the picture, and soliloquizing. "Say, shall I put e starry on e?" Circle, "Surely." All e lighty. Then reached the picture toward one of the circle to pass round for inspection. "No, wait e, fix e more. There, take e. No, wait e, fix e more." And so on to five or six efforts, Just like an artist, every time he looks sees some little imperfection. Then the picture was passed all around the circle for inspection. We may be excused for repeating here that the picture was a bust near life size. The reader can see that either this record is false, or the picture must have been made under conditions precluding any fraud whatever. 484. Then a lady form, wearing the emblem of the Order of Braveheart, stood to view, in shining garments, diamond-bedecked waist girdle, saying, "We are trying to educate as far and fast as we can," and vanished. And another, much taller, took the former's place, stood a moment, and vanished, and one came forth from cabinet, braiding her hair, and the question was asked whether the spirits could give to Mr. Butler the name of the lady of whom the picture was made for Mr. Butler during the seances for Beyond the Veil, and Bessie was going to try to give it, but Redfeather said he would get it and give it to the circle, and then suddenly, there came from the cabinet a lady in very elegant and graceful form and attire, and some one of the circle asked, "Is this the lady?" To which the spirit bowed assent, pointed toward Mr. Butler, and said, "My name is Beatrice," raised her hands, bowed, and returned into the cabinet, and a gentleman came forth, began talking, and saying, 485. "Gentlemen and ladies, I was a great drinker on earth, but I reformed because I had to, and I had to because I was where I could no longer get the liquor. If I could only make some people understand my history, they might be much benefited thereby. But then, what is experience to me is no experience to you. It seems impossible for one to experience for another. Each must experience for himself. But of course persons may have similar experiences. But there is a long train of consequences to the whiskey and morphine habits. There are self-murder, homicide. But, worst of all, transmitted appetites. 486. The poor soul whose appetite is born in him has no road of escape from the terrible tempter. You should have great sympathy for the poor fellow with an inherited abnormal appetite. Had I the ability, I would like to portray to the people the far-reaching influences of these habits. I wish now that I could speak to a thousand as to you. I would like to tell people and have them understand of the influence from this side bearing down upon the poor victims of perverted natures, and for the sake of the little ones growing up all over your world. Then there are different appetites and different reasons for the habits. The inherited appetites take to the habits because they like the taste and crave to satiate the taste. With such the road of reform is very difficult to travel. Some do not like the taste but the effect, such can reform, can abstain at will, but are generally borne down by their convivial associates until they fall under the influences of those passed on, and reflecting back their conditions. If all could know and attract those of pure habits, then they could be able to join our band of brave hearts on arrival here. At conclusion of anonymous, 487. Redfeather dipped in, taking the position that anyone can reform that wants to. That there is no use having too much sentiment about it. But just reform, that is all there is to be done, just quit and sober up. A. Redfeather, through his medium, Mrs. Abba, engages the attention of the circle away from being too much concentrated on the doings of the manifestant forms, and keeping up a lively mirthful social sympathy all round the circle, thus taking the place of Arsam in producing Rending the Veil, and of Daniel Abrian in Beyond the Veil. 488. Frederick, the artist, dictates to the typewriter the following message, to wit, "I was, and am yet, an artist, and I wish to say to you, my friends, that I have found as many beautiful scenes to paint upon earth as I have found in the spirit world. It is not the real beauty of the scene or the subject, but the emotions it awakens in the soul of the artist, that enable him to place upon canvas a picture that will appeal to others. He cannot hope, at all times, to awake the same emotions in others. Indeed, he is more than fortunate if they can catch the faintest glimpse of his feelings. Beautiful mountain scenes that have exalted the soul of the painter, made him feel the wonderful power of creation, have often called forth no greater response than, that looks like a good place to prospect in. A picture of an old man and woman who began life in the early freshness of a dewy morn, and who have traveled life's weary road until the setting of the sun, and have seated themselves on a rock as moss-grown as they with the burden of its years, is looked at and said to be real life-like. See how tired the poor old codgers look. But we do not despair. We know somewhere a kindred soul will look with joy upon their careworn faces, awakening the ambition within him to live a useful life, that, when the sun of his life shall set, he may gaze upon it with some of the peace that has crept into their fast-dimming eyes. 489.